specialisation in a variety of media, and he's going to tell us about that in his career path now. Thank you.
Thanks, Carol. Yes, hello everyone, good morning, and thank you for coming. I am Patrick Smith, and I was a student here, so I was sat where you guys are sitting only in 2006. And I've done various things. I'm just going to talk about some of the things I've done and some of the things I've learned and what I think are the skills that can help you and the kind of things that employers are after. And then I'm going to introduce you to two more recent graduates who are going to talk about some of the things that they've done as well. In case you didn't see the subtle hint on the front page, that is my username on Twitter. If you want to reply on or to mention me, and I believe this is the hashtag that we're using this week for the Journalism Week, which has had some really great speakers, so it's kind of humbling to be speaking alongside some great people. I've got 6 points to make today, which are all about the skills and the way that journalism's changing. My specialism is to write about the media industry. I cover newspapers, magazines, digital media. I write about startups. I write about journalism for various titles and for a site that I founded. Or rather co-founded. So I think I've got an interesting steer, hopefully a useful steer on what employers are after, and I'll share that with you now. So the points are, don't limit yourself, don't put yourself into one niche or one medium. This is a conversation. Social media is not a fad, it's here to stay. It's a huge part of journalism right now, it's a huge part of publishing, and it can help you in lots of different ways. Don't be scared of money. I'm primarily a financial reporter, and one of the things I think that everyone needs to have a little bit of experience of is financial reporting. You should try this at home, which is a reference to digital media and how the only real way to understand it is to experiment yourself. Banning the blog, about which more later, and read more than you write, because the most important thing to do as a journalist, I think, is to be knowledgeable and to read all the things that make you an expert. But first things first, I was asked to talk a little bit about my strange career so far, so here we go. I am the editor and chief analyst of a site called themediabriefing.com, which is 6 months old. It is a B2B website, which means it's for people that work in the media. It's for executives, it's for people that work in newspapers, in advertising, in video, in TV. It's a really interesting site. It's a very experimental site, in that we're indexing lots of news. It's not a news site, we don't have reporters, we have an editorial staff of one, so it's just me, and have a look at that. It's entirely digital. I only work in digital. I've worked in digital media exclusively since, I think, late 2009. And I write analysis rather than news. I write more, I suppose they're features, but they're more blog posts or just short, pithy analysis on what's going on in the media world. So, as I said, I was here in 2006. I did the newspapers course. I did lots and lots of work experience, which some of you may identify with. I did some blogging, but not in a serious way, which I regret in a way. I wish I'd have started earlier. And I went to Leeds Uni before that and put in many hours on Leeds Student, the newspaper of Leeds University. And I wanted to work in newspapers, which some of you may also want to do. That was the goal, was to leave here and get a job on the Times or on the Yorkshire Evening Post or wherever it might be. It didn't work out like that. What happened was I got a job on Press Gazette, which was and is the journalism magazine. It's the magazine for the UK publishing news industry. So it covers newspapers and magazines and those things I was talking about. It was in part thank you to Piers Morgan, who invented a crazy scheme called the Press Cadets, which Susan in the audience may remember, which you very kindly helped me with, which was a sort of reality TV show to get a journalism trainee, a kind of journalism idol thing, which sadly no longer exists, but it was good fun and I was lucky enough to win that. Press Gazette's the national trade title for the journalism industry, as I've said, so just whizzed through this. It's very involved in the campaigning side of Press Gazette. We campaigned to extend the Freedom of Information Act successfully, I might add, and things like extortionate libel fees, which could cripple small newspapers and so on. I whizzed through this. This is just a picture of me on the job on the Press Cadets packs. This was the first day when we were told to get a job as a sandwich board holder in London. That was the task. This was a task set by Time Out London. And we had, I think, about an hour to get the job, and we had to do it for at least 6 hours of the day, and that's me in Leicester Square holding a theatre ticket sign. So the things we do for this job. And here are just some stories, which were front page stories in 2006 and 7. Any story that starts, stalker law jail threat. It's quite a nice headline, I thought. Which was an unusual use of the Harassment Act to stop journalists writing about a coal-fired power station which was about to destroy a beauty spot. And that was a tip-off from somebody. That was an interview with Roger Alton, who was the editor of The Observer, who left under controversial circumstances. And that's definitely the most sweary interview I've ever done. And he did threaten to punch me at one point. And I said, can I quote you on that? And I did quote him on that. And it was a pull quote. It said, I'll punch him in the face, or words to that effect. And that was something you may relate to. We campaigned on work experience being unpaid for as much as 6 months or more without pay. This still goes on in the industry today, and the NUJ led a very good campaign against that, and the Press Gazette, we supported it. And that was just another one, which was Greater Manchester Police using the Terrorism Act to put an injunction on a new book that was coming out to do with this man, which was a man that was involved in Islamic terrorism. So using the Terrorist Act, using national security laws to stop a journalist's book coming out, which is a hugely worrying thing. And that was the blog we set up at Press Gazette. So I've been blogging for my job since 2008. And I still find it, I think, frustrating that some people don't see blogging as a legitimate part of journalism or some way separate to professional journalism. I've been doing this as my bread and butter job for at least 3 or 4 years now. My next job was Paid Content UK, which is the UK wing of paidcontent.org, which is a website set up in the early 2000s by a guy called Rafa Ali. It's a really great site, I really recommend it. I had a great time working there. Again, entirely online. It's now owned by The Guardian. It was bought out by The Guardian in 2009, but it is entirely online again. News analysis, reporting live. Unlike a newspaper, there's no deadline. It's just continuous deadline. The deadline is now, was the same we used to say. It's all about getting the news out as it happens and updating it throughout the day. So it's not like a newspaper whereby you would file your story, it goes into print, and then that's it. This is about when the next development happens, you update the story live. And also, if you're wrong, you correct it, and you correct it on the story. Instead of just having, you know, all you could say when you work on a newspaper is, I'm very sorry you feel that way, that this story was wrong, why don't you write a letter? In digital media, the ethos has to be, if we are wrong, we should correct it. And if the story has moved on, we should update it. And also, it's not just about text. One of the big things at Paid Content was to think visually, to think creatively about how you can display a story. So not just words, not just 300 words, what about a graph? Sometimes a great graph or a great picture is worth 300 words, and you only need one line, perhaps, to explain it and put it into context. For example, that shows, the red line shows newspaper cover prices, the blue line is newspaper circulation. So the left-hand graph is the number of papers that are sold every day, the red line is. So you can see the correlation. As newspaper sales go down, the price goes up, because that's the way that the newspaper industry offsets the decline in audience. And for a paid content readers who are interested in the economics of the media industry, that's the kind of thing they'd want to read. And that's all that story has. There was a little bit of text underneath just to explain the numbers, but you could write 3,000 words on that, but I think this makes the point just as well. And that was done with Google Docs, which is a free software. And that was, I just wanted to show that I'm quite happy with this picture of Rupert Murdoch with a character from World of Warcraft next to him. And making the point that why is it that World of Warcraft can have revenue of 2.16 billion a year, whereas newspapers are going out of business? Why is that, and what could you learn from that? And then in 2010, I quite wanted to mention this because I decided to go freelance. And I remember being a student here and thinking, to be freelance is quite a frightening thing. It's quite a frightening prospect because you don't know where your next paycheck is going to come from. You don't necessarily know who's going to pay you or you're going to get paid at all. But it's actually very, very liberating. And I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I am technically still freelance now, although I essentially only have one big client. It's great, I mean, it really was good. These are just some of the people that I worked for, doing news shifts, doing features, and I did a whole bunch of other stuff as well, as well as working on my own site, which is peacewithjournalist.com. So I would recommend going freelance. But just on that, it helps to have a specialism. It helps to have a specialism because if you're going to be a freelance reporter or a feature writer or a TV journalist or whatever it is, there are lots of generalists. To have a specialist knowledge and expertise, that's exactly the kind of thing that editors are after. So I would strongly suggest that you become an expert in whatever it is you're interested in, because that makes you instantly more employable. I just wanted to share this because I did some reporter's guides for Press Gazette, but I just wanted to share the truly frightening artwork. I don't even quite see the look on his face, but there you go. You might imagine that turning up at your tour. That really is a vision of hell. But doing the reporter's guides was good fun, though. That was one I did for the general election. I did one for the World Cup as well. It was everything journalists need to know. They were good fun. Then just getting to the end of my career monologue now, but this is the Frontline Club, where I was an event organiser and producer. The Frontline Club is a journalist club in Paddington, famous now for hiding Julian Assange. And I was involved in hiding Julian Assange, so to speak, in a very indirect way. And the WikiLeaks phenomenon was a really interesting thing to be part of. And I used to run events to do with the new media and to do with newspapers and the media industry. And it was great fun. And just on events as well, I really saw these events as journalism. It might be the sort of thing you've never considered that would be part of a journalist's skills. But I had a deadline. Once a month, there would be an event on media. I had to get four panelists, so they had to be experts, contacts of mine that I built up, and you had to persuade them to talk. So it was actually exactly the same as working on a newspaper, working on a feature, but instead of writing down what they say, you're persuading them to sit on a table at an event like this and talk to people like you. And these are just two people that said yes to me doing it, and I had great fun doing that. And there is Julian, he chose the club to announce that he had the world's biggest intelligence leak. I think that was actually for the Iraq war logs. And that really was an interesting week, I can tell you. And this is my site, this is themediabriefing.com, founded with two colleagues. I am the first employee of the site, and I edit it, and I'm also the chief analyst. We aggregate stories, so we link to things. We link to a lot of things. Hundreds of stories throughout the day, and we sort it and curate it and analyse it. It's an intelligence tool. It's something that will help you do your job if you are a media executive. But there you go. This is the bit where I tell you what I think are the skills that will help. But before I do, those are some assumptions. These are the things that I don't think change. There are journalism skills that have stayed the same, and I think always will, despite all the change in digital media and the different mediums. For example, you can write. Now, being able to write, whether it's to write for print or to write for TV or whatever it is, the skill stays exactly the same. It doesn't change. It doesn't need to change when it's online media. It's exactly the same. Don't lose that. And I must say that I think this course was very good for me in order to make you a very disciplined writer. A new sense, know what is a story. Again, it doesn't change. It's exactly the same, no matter what the medium. Sources, who do you know? Who trusts you? And are you looking after them? As in, if someone tells you something off the record, are you sure you're going to keep that off the record? You really are not. You are nothing without those sources. Those freelance things that I showed before, the freelance gigs that I had, were entirely due to the sources that I have and the people that I know and are willing to tell me things. Good with people and not a complete arsehole. I think that there seems to be a sort of old-fashioned assumption that to be in journalism, to be successful in a newsroom, it's a very kind of a macho place and people shout at each other and you have a news editor goose-stepping down the desks and things like that. But actually, many of the most successful journalists you meet are the nicest people, and especially editors. They tend to be very charming and very nice people who leave a good impression, which is why they build their sources and people trust them. There's also at a scene level why their staff like them. Obviously, good editors know how to shout as well. That's important. But bear in mind, people, the lasting impression you leave on people, whether it might be a prospective employer or a source or whoever, it's very important to think about that. Another thing is, don't go into this industry to be liked. Because a lot of people won't like what you write, especially if it's true. there's a lot of people employed to make sure that their brand looks favourably in the outside world. But that's not your job to make people look favourably. It's your job to make the news, to tell the truth. So there are people whose job is specifically employed to stop what might be true to come out. And it could be that you're quite friendly with PR people. It could be that you're friendly with a brand you're writing about or a company. But you've got to realise that your real responsibility is always to the readers. And just like everything I've said, that applies to every kind of journalism. It doesn't matter about the media. Oh, yeah, and don't make assumptions. That's bad journalistic practice. And about the don't limit yourself. And I know that some of you are doing newspapers, some of you are doing radio, or it might be magazines, it might be a specific kind of media. That's fine, because there's specific technical skills to do with radio journalism that a newspaper person doesn't need to know. But don't limit yourself in terms of what you want to do. Have an open mind. It's great to have an ambition. Nothing wrong with ambition, but just realise that there's lots of different things you can do and lots of different places you can work. You might not have ever heard of the title that you end up working for. It's amazing, if you ask people in the industry now who are senior reporters, the people who have made it, ask them what their first job was, and it wasn't at The Guardian. For a lot of people, it was Shoe Leather Monthly, for example. The head of digital at The Guardian, who's just left, his first job was Shoe Leather Monthly, and the other digital exec, first job was Big Pharma. Yeah, which I believe is still going. So don't limit yourself in that way. Have a think about where else you could go. Look for opportunities in unusual places. Jobs in newspapers and broadcasting in the big brands, as I assure you, well, this is nothing new to you, they're very scarce, they're very few and far between. Some of you will do it, of course. Someone has to, but not everyone. Don't think I'm just a magazine journalist, I'm just a newspaper journalist. Think about what can you do. And the digital side of it, understanding digital media, I don't think is an option. We're actually employing now in the media briefing, we're actually doing interviews. I find it unthinkable that someone could say, I don't really understand what a blog is or how to do it. I find it unthinkable that somebody wouldn't know the basics of social media. They wouldn't get through the door, they would not get an interview if they didn't at least understand how Facebook and Twitter works and why it's important to journalism. And that is increasingly the case in all forms of media, so it's not an option. I was going to show that video, but I'm not going to show it. But I'll put these slides online, but if you watch this very funny video, it's a journalism student saying that they want to work for the New York Times and that's it, and nothing else will do. But it's very funny, and it makes my point better than I'm making it, so check that out later. I'm not going to go on about the death of newspapers, because I think newspapers aren't dying. They are not dying. It's perfectly legitimate and reasonable economic model of media is for stuff to be printed on newsprint. If you look in London, the Evening Standard is now free, and nearly 500,000 people read it every day, and it makes money, its profits are increasing. There is nothing wrong with newsprint. The problem is regional newspapers, very under threat, very, very under threat, and the prospects are not great. If you could look at the Yorkshire Evening Post, where is it? It's lost 70% of its circulation in the past 20 years. Since 1989, it's lost 70% of its paid circulation. What happens in 10 years? What happens in 20 years? I know you had the YEP editor on earlier in the week, and it would be interesting if you could have been here to debate this, but frankly, the prospects are not good. I can see a time when these papers do go free in Leeds. I can imagine there being a free Yorkshire Evening Post. Personally, I think that would be wise, and I think that will happen one day. But so don't forget business-to-business journalism. When I was a student here, it wasn't on my radar at all, to be honest. What is B2B journalism? It's trade journalism, it's trade media. It's magazines and websites for a specific profession. So it might be agriculture, it might be accountancy, it might be retail. I work for Press Gazette, which is about journalism, it's about the media industry. It's doing well. It's actually doing well as a sector. It's expanding. It's mostly online. I write a lot about B2B media. Most of it is online. The print aspect of it is shrinking all the time, and that is a very good thing for its prospects. It's also very global as well, so you may be sent to Shanghai and so on. There are jobs. I know people that are hiring now. seriously, come and talk to me after. I know people that are hiring in London right now for graduate reporters. I know one company that has 12 vacancies. You've just got to be good with numbers, but that's something you should learn anyway. It is great training. You tend to get promoted faster. There are a lot of opportunities. I found it fantastic training. And you learn to write for a specific community, which I think is a really good skill. You learn to find out what people are after, what people find important. I realise I'm going a bit slow here, I'm going to have to speed up. Second point, social media. Going back to the digital media is not optional bit, social media is absolutely crucial. I don't know what that tweet's about. So this is TweetDeck. Has anyone used TweetDeck? Who's on Twitter? Everyone. Pretty much everyone's on Twitter, but who uses TweetDeck again? Who uses any kind of Twitter client? Any kind of Twitter program? See, I think you need, as a journalist, to use a program like TweetDeck. I think it's crucial. It really is. Download it, have a look. There's others, there's things like Seismic, Hootsuite, so on and so on. If you're just using Twitter.com, you're not getting the benefit of it. Because with this, I track topics, I track people, I track trends. I know what's going on, I know what people are talking about in my industry. I know when people are talking about my company, and I know when people are talking about the companies that I'm following. And it is surprising the stuff that people are willing to say publicly. So track topics with TweetDeck. Facebook, 10% of the Daily Mail's traffic comes from it increasingly. People are not going to come to your site, they're going to find it somewhere else. You have to understand this stuff. With Twitter, it's a distribution platform for your content, so you can let your readers know what you've published. It's a communication channel, it's a reporting tool, and it's a networking tool. It's a networking tool for you to find the kind of people that might want to give you a job and the kind of people that might want to give you stories. You know, with direct messaging, do you use direct messaging? I counted the other day, I got 50 in one day. I'm not bragging about it. I work in digital media. 50 direct messages, and there was at least two or three story leads just from people telling me what was going on. And this is what Paul Lewis says. He's an investigative journalist at The Guardian, British Press Award winner, Bevin's Investigative Journalism Award winner. He says, "I wasn't convinced about Twitter at first, but it quickly turned out to be quite useful for investigating. Twitter is not just a website, and it's not microblogging. It is an entirely different medium, like email, fax, or even newspapers. The way in which information travels on Twitter, the shape of it, is different." I think that's a really good point, because it is different. It's not blogging, but it's very useful. And if one of the best investigative journalists in the country thinks it's good, then it's maybe something for you all to take very seriously. Just wanted to put this in. Financial reporting, I knew probably not very much about when I graduated, but came to kind of have a baptism of fire in learning what profit and loss is, and it's a really good skill, and I would recommend that if you take the time to just, I don't know, read the Financial Times, or there's lots of good guides online, it is a really good skill. It does look good on your CV to be able to understand it, because imagine being asked now, how would you do? If someone said, do me a 300-word report on this annual report and tell me how this company's doing, would you know how they're doing? Would you know which bit to look for? Once you know, it's simple, but I suppose that's the same with everything in life. This is a really key point. What editors are looking for now, what the industry's looking for, is for you to tell them what the future is. It's for you to tell them what digital publishing should be. Because quite frankly, there's a lot of people who are running magazines or are running publishing companies who don't know. There are a lot of people running big media organisations, and high up, they do not understand this stuff. They're looking for people that do. So things like how to run a blog, tweeting, video and audio. I'm recording this speech right now on Audioboo. This is on Audioboo. Does anyone use Audioboo? Audioboo is a kind of audio blogging platform. So this is being recorded now onto my iPhone, and when it's done, I'm going to press a button and it will be uploaded online. And later on, I'm going to publish it on my blog. The whole process will take 2 minutes. And I do lots of interviews on Audioboo, and it's very quick, it's simple, it's easy, and you'd be surprised how good the quality is. Video, I have a Zoe, I didn't bring it for some reason. I have a Kodak Z8 camera, it's this big, cost me about 100 quid. HD quality, and I upload that to YouTube. And I use either iMovie or Windows Movie Maker, or Adobe Premiere Elements 9. The first two are free. It's very cheap, it's very simple, it's very easy to get into audio and video. And again, the kind of skill that can just raise you up a couple of levels to people that don't have these skills. Data journalism skills, understanding big amounts of numbers, understanding how to obtain data and how to manipulate it, make sure you understand it and visualize it. That's one of the really key skills that editors are after now, particularly in newspapers, particularly the online side of newspapers. And the visualizations and matching. I'm just going to show you a really good one. This is by David McCandless, who's a genius designer and digital designer, and I'm a journalist. This is a visual representation of just big numbers. You might hear it on TV or read it in a newspaper, 10 billion, 100 billion, 500 billion, but it becomes meaningless at that scale. The human brain can't comprehend how big 500 billion is. It doesn't, what do you compare it to? So he's created these squares. The global pharmaceutical market, 825 billion. That's medicine and Medicaid per year. The Iraq war was 860 billion. So on and so on and so on. You can see Apple's market, so on and so on. The war on drugs, 69 million. This is journalism. It might just look like squares, but it is. This is journalism. This is telling a story better than you could in 3,000 words. And that's all you need. And it's a very clever way of doing it. And then that's how much we spent on the global bailout of the banks, which is something like 11,900 billion. So compare all that. That's what we spent on bailing out banks globally. And we're still spending it. Next point. I'm not a huge fan of the word blog, because I think it has some very negative connotations. People seem to see it as separate to journalism, as if it's another form of life that has nothing to do with professional reporting. I was interested to see Paul Napier's comments, the Yorkshire Evening Post editor, in this very room early this week, talking about how having a blog doesn't necessarily make you a journalist, which is true, but I would reply to that. Just because you have a blog doesn't mean you can't be a journalist. Because of course you can. And also, does it matter? Because if people are reading it and it's interesting, then that's a reader that's gone somewhere that might not necessarily go to your site, and that's the way I think you need to look at it. So it's a bad word. There is online publishing, there is offline publishing. It doesn't matter where you publish it as long as it's good. You can publish anything you want on a blog. It can be dribble, it can be nonsense, it can be fantastic. And there are many, many independent bloggers that are doing better stuff that's in so-called professional media. There are people, there are experts in different fields, there are amateurs who should be really professional and should be paid for it. The blog is the platform, you can publish anything you like on the blog, so I really would ban the word blog. Just as an example, this is the Going Underground blog, London Underground, blogspot.com, which is written by Annie Mole. She's not necessarily a journalist, but if you live in London and you use the tube, as everybody in London tends to, this is the best site. It's informative. It's updated every day. It's interesting. She breaks stories. There's a community of people that comment on the site. This is better than anything these people are doing. This is quotes from The Guardian, from Time Out, from The Metro, people talking about how good it is. None of these people have anything to rival that. It's too niche. It's too small. Is it journalism? Well, I don't care. I just like reading it. It doesn't matter to me. Is this a blog? Does it matter? It's quite good. I don't know if you guys read this. I think you've been involved in contributing, some students did. It doesn't matter what we call it. It's just digital journalism. And last point, I don't know how I'm doing for time. Should I catch you? No, I've gone quite fast. You should read more than you write. I cannot stress this enough, you should be reading a lot. How many people here want to work in newspapers? How many people want to work in magazines, for example? If you all put your hands up, all the people want to work in those print medias. How many people of you either read a newspaper every day or subscribe to a magazine? You do both those things. Do you see my point? There are some people that want to work in magazines or newspapers that don't subscribe to a magazine or don't read a newspaper every day. And I think that's a really important thing you should do. Read, read, and read.